Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. This is a big week for education. The final deadline for teacher evaluations is Saturday, the next final deadline, so stay tuned for that. And there was an education-focused mayoral candidate forum on Tuesday, but before the next mayor takes over in January, let's look at some of what this mayor, Mayor Bloomberg, has accomplished. I'm joined now by Beth Furtick, contributing editor for education at WNYC Radio and schoolbook.org, our education website. She's been checking in periodically with some of the big failing high schools that are being closed to make way for smaller schools. And her latest feature airs today and tomorrow. Hi, Beth.
Hi.
I heard the feature. It is fantastic. I commend it to all the listeners. Keep your ears open for that piece.
It's going to air again in All Things Considered today.
Terrific. And, of course, people can go to WNYC.org for it
as well. And
schoolbook.org. And it was Mayor Bloomberg who embraced this strategy for dealing with failing schools that you feature in your piece. Close them and reopen smaller schools with the within that same big high school building. Tell us a little bit about what you learned, even in visiting this one school today, the on-the-ground result of that policy.
Well, the policy was because so many of the large high schools were doing poorly. They had graduation rates below 50%, as Columbus did. 40% of their kids were graduating on time last year. And, you know, it was a situation that definitely needed some help. And their policy was to replace these large schools with the smaller schools that would open as the larger school would gradually phase out. And they point to success in this strategy by saying that at the smaller schools, about 75% of the kids graduate on time, which is way more than at the schools they replaced. But the question is, what happens to that larger school as it's shrinking? Right now at Columbus High School, which in its heyday, you know, in the 60s or 70s, had 4,500 kids, was considered one of the best schools in the Bronx for decades. People would lie about their address to get their kids into the school because it was so good. It was just for kids in the North Central Bronx area. Well, today it just has 350 juniors and seniors. And the principal, Lisa Fuentes, has had to reduce her staff because, of course, she can't keep up with what she used to have. And that means that she doesn't have the same types of course offerings that she used to have that you would expect at a large neighborhood high school.
And what your piece really captures so well is that as the school phases out, it becomes a shell of its former self, that there are fewer students over time, fewer teachers, fewer course offerings, and little by little, it dwindles down to just the bare essentials of a school.
Right. And so you would expect that at a school that has juniors and seniors, they would be taking upper-level classes by now, like physics or chemistry. Well, Columbus can't offer physics and chemistry. They can't offer AP classes except for AP English, which this one boy that I spoke to, David Damiani, had already taken, and he wanted to take other AP classes. And I think we have a clip of him right now.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and play that clip?
You know, we used to have AP chemistry, calculus, all these, you know, pre-college courses.
David Damiani. Now, I have to say, when I heard him this morning on in your piece, I at first thought he was a teacher, not a student, because he seems so intelligent, so well-spoken, and yet he seems to have been shortchanged by the system.
He felt like there were other classes he wanted to take, certainly in his senior year, and he had wanted to go to the University of Vermont, but he didn't get in. Now, I can't say that it was because he didn't take these classes. That's unclear. The school said that it was because he didn't do well enough in all the classes he did take.
The college to which he applied,
yes,
did not get in.
Yeah, the university said that in a letter to the principal because she was lobbying on his behalf. She really wanted him to get in because he's been exceptionally active on campus. He belongs to so many clubs. And he is a good student, although his math scores were not very high. But the fact remains that she said, very poignantly, I failed this kid because he was not able to take all the classes that he had wanted to take. He told me that he wanted to take Italian, which Columbus used to offer, and it doesn't anymore, so he was studying it
ironically,
on his own.
Ironically.
And he also, he had already taken Spanish, but he couldn't take the higher level Spanish classes because those were no longer available. So it's interesting, you know, if you go to a typical high school, you expect to see these things, but because Columbus has lost so many of its teachers because it has a small student population now, and ironically, those teachers, many of them are now in the six other small schools in the same building, but Columbus kids can't just go and take a chemistry class upstairs in another school because, first of all, it's very hard to schedule, but second of all, that school, that small school, such as the Collegiate Institute for Science and Math, which has a former Columbus science teacher, they couldn't offer a seat to every kid from Columbus who wanted it because they just have to, you know, concentrate on their own students first. But I am told that the other small schools made room for about 10 kids from Columbus in AP classes, and some took art classes. And the school also, ironically, Columbus, I mean, paid for an art teacher to come last semester so that they could have art for their kids. Well, it was their old art teacher. He's now working
from Columbus.
Yes, he's now working upstairs in another school, but they had to pay him to come and teach a semester, and that's all they could afford.
Now, let's take a couple of calls from our listeners on Mayor Bloomberg's education legacy. What was his most significant achievement? I know the mayor himself would likely say he hasn't fixed the schools, but what changes did he make that you expect his successors in office to keep? If you're a listener and you pay attention to Mayor Bloomberg's education legacy, call us at 212-433-WMYC, 212-433-9692 on Mayor Bloomberg's education legacy. And Beth, to be fair on this issue of the one student that you featured, the DOE official you interviewed did not agree that this student had had a bad experience at this school, given that he got into a college and many students don't graduate at all from high school.
Right. This student got into the State University of New York in Plattsburgh. And the DOE official I spoke to, Josh Thomases, who's a deputy chief academic officer, said, hey, that's a great school, you know, and we succeeded. We got that kid to graduate. Now, the point is, yes, it may be fine that he got to go to a college, but were his choices limited because he couldn't take all the classes he wanted? And to that point, Josh Thomases said, we are succeeding because we are getting more students to graduate in the smaller schools that are replacing the large schools that were previously failing. Our goal is to get more kids to graduate and to go to college, and that is happening. But at the same time, he was also saying what's happening at Columbus is really not that much different than at many of the small schools we've created. This Bloomberg administration, as you know, has created hundreds of small schools throughout the city, and most of them are located in big high schools that they have since closed down or are still closing, such as Columbus. Jamaica High School is also in the process of closing and has two more classes, I believe. Paul Robeson in Brooklyn is still closing. So these situations are happening in other buildings where kids can't take all the classes they want. Sometimes they take distance learning classes online. Sometimes the school will partner with a college. Columbus does that with Lehman College, in fact, for some students, a limited number who can take college courses. But Josh Thomas is at the DOE. His point was small schools can't offer everything for every kid. That's just not possible. We leave it to the principals to decide. But there is one distinction. At a small school, that school is planned, and it will gradually grow, and the principal will decide what to offer, and the school will have a theme. It's different at a school that's shrinking, where they've had to cut their offerings, and they have to lean on the other principals in the building or come up with creative solutions. There's a fundraiser now who's helping Columbus. Her group is called the Partnership for Student Advocacy, and she's trying to raise money for the kids to take more art and music next year and to pay for their college application fees and SAT fees, because she says, you know, at schools in Manhattan where her kids go, PTAs do this all the time. They pay for extras.
And I should say that on schoolbook.org, you posted that same question that we're asking our listeners, and I'm going to turn to a couple of calls in a moment, about Mayor Bloomberg's legacy. And you did get at least one positive response, quote, at least he tried, unlike his predecessors, right? Okay, let's take a couple of calls. Alan in Brooklyn, you are on WNYC with Beth Fertig.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It just seems to me whether the mayor has succeeded or not by changing the identity and the names and allocation of the schools within buildings, he has eliminated the ability to do a real scientific measurement of progress. Because by definition, any controlled experiment means you're looking at the same object over time. He's changed the objects. So he can claim that he's progressed, but it's really impossible to say what has happened because that which used to be Columbus High School is now several other separate schools. And one can't tell what would have been in the same Columbus High School several years later if they had tried to make the same effort within that unit. It almost seems like a shell game he set up.
And it is interesting. Thank you, Alan, for your call. In your piece, Matthew interviewed the man who attended the hearing, the closure hearing for the Columbus closing years before, and he makes a similar point that you might have tried to save this school in other ways. Is it possible to evaluate Mayor Bloomberg's legacy? Are there statistical items we can point to? Graduation rates, are they up? Is there any, or does the caller have a fair point that it's very difficult to evaluate the evidence because so much change has gone on, including these school closures and the opening of the smaller schools within the same buildings?
Well, there's two issues. First of all, you're talking about Councilman Jimmy Vaca from the Bronx, who is a 1973 Columbus graduate who's very dismayed by what's happened at his school, and he believes more resources could have prevented the closing of Columbus. When you talk to the Bloomberg administration, they believe that overall their experiment, as the caller calls it, has been successful because graduation rates have gone up. When Mayor Bloomberg took office, fewer than 50% of New York City high school students were graduating in 4 years. Now it's over 60%. So that is a big difference. But as the caller points out, within those different large high school campuses that have now been replaced by small schools, the demographics vary from school to school. And we have that noted on the schoolbook.org site today for Columbus. So Columbus High School has a much greater share of the neediest special education students, kids who require much smaller classes separated from other kids, than most of the other small schools in that same building. Columbus High School has more English language learners than most of the other small schools in that building, although one of them, a new school, is really solely for English language learners. They all have different themes. Columbus High School was a zone school. It used to take any kids from its neighborhood. The other schools in that building reserve some of their seats for kids who have high scores in science or humanities and then take anyone else for another share of their population. So it's difficult to really compare apples to apples.
Let's take another call, Beth. This is Rachel. She's calling from Brooklyn. Rachel, you're on WNYC.
Hi, I'm a member of the CEC for District 15. And
which is in Brooklyn.
Yeah, which is in Brooklyn. It's in sort of Borum Hill, stretching down into Sunset Park in Brooklyn. And we've had a couple of really contentious issues. And one of the things that I've noticed on the CEC relating to the mayor's sort of blanket support and non-transparent support of charter schools is that it's created an incredible amount of anxiety on the part of parents who are not even in the public school system yet, but who are
enrolling kindergartners, you mean?
I'm sorry?
Enrolling kindergartners, you mean?
Yeah, or even, I mean, when a charter school moved into Carroll Gardens, there was one single hearing, and all of the parents who spoke at that hearing were parents of, like, babies, 6 months old, 3 year old kids who did not have kids in the charter in the public school system at all. But what they had heard, either whether it was charter school advertising or just, you know, chatter amongst parents, was that the schools weren't good or it wasn't fair or the classes were too big, which frankly is ridiculous in Carroll Gardens because it's surrounded by terrific schools. And so consequently, you had this really kind of ugly quasi-class anxiety, almost hostility towards the public school system. As it happened, it really did play out in class and race terms because the charter grade school was moving into a building that already housed three middle and high schools that were
so this is another small school,
primarily not white, not not affluent parents.
This is another part of the small schools movement. You're talking about replacing, or not replacing, but moving more small schools into buildings where there are co-locations, and in this case, the charter schools that you're talking about, and they create a lot of friction.
Are you familiar, Beth, with the kind of tension and anxiety that Rachel describes between communities and classes?
And this is happening, you know, not just with charters, but with other small schools that take root in a building that used to have one school. Throughout the city, you now have almost 1,800 schools. When Bloomberg took office, it was about 1,200. You don't have 1,800 buildings, though. So it's very common now for schools to be sharing the same building. It's pretty, you know, typical, in fact. But there has also been an explosion of charter schools since Bloomberg took office. And so there's now over 150 charter schools, I believe. And so it's much more common for those to be opening. And the friction that happens there is not just that a charter is opening in the same building as your beloved neighborhood school, but it's also a question of, this is a privately managed school. You know, they can maybe do things that the neighborhood school couldn't do, such as replacing the lights, which was an issue in Cobble Hill when a charter school replaced some of the lights and people were angry because the other school had to wait for replacing the light fixtures, which contain PCBs. You know, so you have all kinds of local issues springing up around the charter schools. Some parents really love it, as you're saying. You know, there are parents who hear that charter schools are better. They have higher test scores and they want their kids to go into the charter schools. But then there are also many parents who believe that they're sapping resources from the regular system and that, you know, the goal should be to support the regular schools. That is another part of Bloomberg's legacy, this debate. And we are going to be hearing the candidates talk more and more about this in the mayoral race. It's a huge issue right now. How much should they support the expansion of charter schools? How much should they support this co-location policy? Many of the candidates have said that they do not want to continue the co-locations without taking a moratorium first. Not all of them, but many of them have said that. Christine Quinn has not said that. And Anthony Weiner, who made his debut at an education debate the other day, did not support that either.
And you will report on that, as well as tomorrow we will hear part two of your feature. What can we look forward to there?
Well, this is just a kind of light look at what the kids think in the Columbus campus of each other's schools. And, you know, anywhere you go, kids are going to have, you know, reputations. You know, schools have reputations, like, you know, the kids will say, like, ah, that one's for the losers or that one's for the jocks. You know, kids, you know, just like anywhere else in any school, they hang out with kids their own type or they have cliques. In Columbus, though, it's like you hang out with your own school and there's not a lot of cross-pollination because each hallway, each school is on its own little part of a corridor in the building, and each school has its own security guards, and kids can't just come and go and walk around the different corridors. So and we weren't able to either. You know, without getting permission from all of the schools, I was only allowed to stay in the Columbus corridor. But I have been to some of the other schools before, and they have very distinct personalities. And, you know, you get a real flavor when you go for one school that has a science theme, one school that has a foreign language theme. They're all different.
Well, and the pieces always give us an opportunity to go inside these school buildings. Many of us don't have that opportunity, so we'll look forward to part two. And today, you said on All Things Considered, we can hear again your piece if we haven't yet heard it today. So I want to thank you so much, Beth Furtick, for being with us.
You're welcome. Morning. The piece is also on schoolbook.org. You can hear the audio there.
Can hear it there. If you want to hear it more than once, please do. And thank you, Beth Furtick, for being with us, contributing editor for education at WNYC Radio and schoolbook.org. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Up next, a crime reporter looks at Little League Baseball in Newark.